Okay, turn to Jeremiah 38. Jeremiah 38 is where we're going to read. Will, you can read Jeremiah 38, 6 through 13. Lem, Jeremiah 38, 7. Antonio, Ephesians 6, 18. David, Galatians 4, 19. Micah, Jeremiah 38, 11. Kenny, Jeremiah 38, 12. This passage we're going to read is a story out of the book of Jeremiah. You know, Jeremiah is the prophet. He is unfortunately pronouncing doom on the nation, and so there were people that were wanting to kill him for that. So he is thrown into a well that had dried out somewhat, so he's stuck in the mud. And so in this, we're going to read about a man named Ebed-Melech, which any of you, if you're about to have a baby, you can write that down as a possible name. Ebed-Melech. Because what this man chooses to do for Jeremiah is a very good picture and shows us how to have effectiveness with people. In life, whether you want to witness, you want to be effective in follow-up, or someday if you hope to pastor, you have to be effective in dealing with people. And there are some things you're going to learn about effectiveness with people. Jeremiah 38, 6 through 13, Will.
So they threw Jeremiah into a cistern that belonged to the king's son, Malchijah, and was located in the courtyard of the guard. When they let Jeremiah down with ropes, because there was no water in the cistern, only mud, Jeremiah sank into the mud. Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian eunuch in the king's house, heard that Jeremiah had been put in the cistern. The king was sitting in the Benjamin Gate. So Ebed-Melech went out of the palace and spoke to the king. "Your Majesty, these men have acted wickedly in all they have done to the prophet Jeremiah by throwing him into the cistern. He will die where he is because of the famine, since there is no more bread in the city." Then the king ordered Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, 30 men are at your disposal. Take them with you and bring up Jeremiah the prophet from the cistern before he dies." So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went into the palace, underneath the storeroom. He took worn-out rags and worn-out clothes from there, and using ropes, he lowered them down to Jeremiah in the cistern. Ebed-Melech and the Ethiopian told Jeremiah, "Put the worn-out rags and clothes under your armpits, under the ropes." And Jeremiah did as he said. They pulled Jeremiah with the ropes and brought him up from the cistern. But Jeremiah remained in the courtyard of the guard.
Okay, effectiveness with people. First part of effectiveness with people is people awareness. And this is where any level of effectiveness, you can't be effective if you're not aware. And that means you have to be attuned and recognize needs in other people. Verse 7.
Now Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, one of the eunuchs, was in the king's house, heard that they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon when the king was sitting at the gate of Benjamin.
Okay, so he heard they had put Jeremiah in the dungeon. This was not good. Very simply, you can't be effective if you're not aware that people have needs. I remember Tom Payne telling me years ago, he had a concert director and he's asking about this person, that person, what's going on in their life, this person sick, that one in the hospital, this one had a relative die, and the guy didn't know any of it, and he's challenging him. You want a pastor? How can you not be aware of anything that's going on with people? That's of course going to make you ineffective. So, according to our verse, we need eyes of compassion. What that means is, if you want to be a blessing in life, you have to be looking for people in need. This is what Jesus did. He challenged the disciples, lift up your eyes. That's very important, because we can become self-absorbed. Look at me, what I'm going through, how I feel. But Jesus said, can you see someone else? Lift up your eyes and be looking for them. So this is practical in a number of ways. Looking for visitors, looking for people who come in by themselves. That's part of the reason why we established the visitor center. If you've been raised in our church, it is completely normal. When you walk in, you know where to go. You know what's going to happen. You know who's going to be there, essentially. Totally normal. You perhaps you don't grasp for a visitor to walk in and make the long walk not knowing what's going to happen. That makes them feel awkward, or people sitting by themselves, standing by themselves. So does that even occur to you? Are you aware? Do you notice when people are missing? And that would, of course, especially be new converts. And there are people that are going through things. Does that even occur to you? Or do you notice when people are not themselves? Most people, in my experience, it's pretty easy to see what's going on in their life. Right? I understand there are some people, they hide things and they cover up. But a lot of people, you can tell when they're not themselves. Normally, they're happy, they're chatty, now they're quiet, they're sad. Those are indicators. Are you attuned to that? So, eyes, you have to be looking, not just at you and what interests you, but looking to other people. And then our text speaks, Ebed-Melech, he had ears of compassion. Verse 7, he heard that they put Jeremiah in the dungeon. Normally in conversation, you will hear things about people. So-and-so's in the hospital, or they have a child in the hospital. So-and-so, they lost their job, or different things. You hear that. Those alert you to need. So what do you do when you see or hear of a problem? And the Bible says that Ebed-Melech, the first thing that you can do with that kind of information is take their need to the king. Verse 8. Where we gave that to? Oh, I might not have given it. Jeremiah 38:8 says he spoke to the king. So he hears that Jeremiah is going to be hurting or in danger in the dungeon, so he goes and speaks to the king. That's a very good picture of prayer. So every believer, when you see or hear about what's going on in somebody else's life, you can speak to our king, which is God, about their needs and ask the king to help them. Ephesians 6:18.
Praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, being watchful to this end with all perseverance and supplication for all the saints.
Supplication for all the saints. Supplication is making requests to a superior or asking for help. That's what it's saying. So that is part of Ephesians 6, written to every believer. One of your job is you should be praying for all the saints. And especially, I hope that you work through and ask God to help people in church. But this is especially important when there is a problem or a crisis in their life. Galatians 4:19.
My dear children, for whom I am again in the pains of childbirth till Christ is formed in you, how I wish I could be with you now and change my tone, because I'm perplexed about you.
Okay, this would be, this verse is a great verse speaking about new converts, little children. These are people in Galatia that had been saved. So they are saved, but you understand, everybody, not everybody who comes to church, not even everybody who answers an altar call gets it. Are you aware of that? There are people, maybe they come for various reasons because they have to, you know, they're on probation, or they have to because... or they want to because people are giving them a job or food or, you know, whatever it might be. They need revelation. That's the only way they're going to make it. So Paul says, it's like childbirth. I'm praying, laboring. God, you have to do a miracle in them so that they... See, we had years ago, had a pioneer pastor. His pioneer church wasn't going very well. And then... had a young couple. He worked at a business. The couple came in, witnessed them. They came and got saved. Finally, thank God, some people got saved. And then the guy told him that he just signed a contract to play professional football. This is in Australia. So it's like, great. We finally get a convert, and now he's going to go away. So they began to fast and pray, God, you need to bring revelation to these people, and I'm asking you to open their eyes. And so God did a miracle. This man said, what I need to do is live for God if I want my marriage to survive. So he actually turned down the chance to play professional football to live for God. Later on wound up becoming a pastor. So that is exactly what Paul is saying. You labor in prayer. It's not a matter of just taking a new convert. Let me tell you 50 things you need to do by Tuesday. It is laboring in prayer. So that is the first thing. Ebed-Melech was aware and then took it to the king. Second thing is wise involvement. It's not enough just to pray. Sometimes we have to act in order to help. Verse 11, 38:11.
So Ebed-Melech took the men with him and went to a room in the palace beneath the treasury, where he found some old rags and discarded clothing. He carried these to the cistern and lowered them to Jeremiah on a roof.
Okay, so Ebed-Melech, hearing, taking it to the king, praying. Now, what can we do practically? He didn't say, our thoughts and prayers are with you as you're stuck in the mud there and probably going to starve to death. They did something. So there can be actions of compassion, actions of love. That might be a conversation of someone who you know is down, calling someone, a visit, taking somebody out for coffee, burger, pizza, have somebody over your house for a meal. Those are practical actions. Years ago, when I was a young disciple, had a man that he backslid. It was actually one of the first time I ever personally knew somebody who backslid, left salvation, went and got involved in sin, and then he came back. And when he came back, I figured this guy's probably feeling embarrassed and nervous. So I just went up to him and just told him how glad I was to see him again and that we missed him. And so, not a big deal. It wasn't like anything heroic. I just was trying to think how he would feel coming back. And he told me later on how much that helped him, just welcoming him. An action. Now, I could have prayed for him, you know, somewhere in the background, and that would have been valid, but he needed an action. And that may be true. There might be an action. All right. Then this is actually what caught my eye about in this story originally. If you're going to get involved in helping people, you must use wisdom. The Bible says that Jeremiah was stuck in the mud. Okay, so they let him down into this well that apparently doesn't have enough water to draw it out. So it's thick mud at the bottom. So he is sunk down. We don't know how far is the up the or how high the mud was coming up his legs. But he is, you ever been stuck in mud like that? A suction. So, we need to pull him out. He understood if we just throw down ropes, put these under your armpits, we're going to rip his arms off. Now, there are some people, they say, and your point is, right? They have no problem. I'm doing something, but they wind up ripping the arms off people. And in other words, some people never survive our help, right? They see that a new convert is making bad decisions, and they tell them everything that's wrong with them. They tell them off, and they think, my job is done. Ripping their arms off, they don't even survive. That wouldn't do good. You see a new convert or somebody, they miss church. What are you, an uncommitted flake? Are you a man or not? What kind of wuss misses church? Or, you hear that they have a problem and you tell them, yeah, well, you need to live for God. You better suck it up, buttercup. That's what it means to be a Christian. Thinking that I'm aware they have a problem. I threw a rope. Yeah, but you ripped their arms off. They didn't survive the help that you gave. So Ebed-Melech here, it's a very interesting thing. He wants to soften the pull. We need to pull him out, but let's soften it while we pull. Verse 12, 38, 12.
Then Ebed-Melech, the Ethiopian, said to Jeremiah, please put these old clothes and rags under your armpits, under the ropes. And Jeremiah did so.
Okay, so the ropes, I don't know how thin they were, under your armpit, that's really going to hurt. Here's some rags. Put them under there. Get some padding. Let's soften it while we pull you out. It's not we want to leave you in the mud. We want you to get out of the mud. But let's make sure that it's possible. So how do we do that today? I think we soften for new converts by ignoring non-essentials. Right? So it is possible that new converts get saved and they have t-shirts with alcohol advertising. So what? Probably their music collection has some songs that contain some bad words. That's not their biggest problem. Right? So let's ignore what's not essential. That would be one way you can soften. Then showing compassion and not just a correction. Speaking kindly. That there's two ways of telling somebody when they're doing something wrong. You can either say, listen, you better knock that off. You're going to burn in hell. Or maybe you struggle. So, you know what? I went through that same thing. Speaking kindly. And so that is wisdom. Jeremiah survived because Ebed-Melech used wisdom. Final thought simply is greater impact. Ebed-Melech wasn't just helping a guy, right? This wasn't just anyone. Jeremiah was a prophet. What Ebed-Melech didn't know is one day there would be a book of the Bible that we just read from, the book of Jeremiah. We learn things about God. We learn things about God's purposes because of what Jeremiah said, what Jeremiah did. The issue is Ebed-Melech didn't know that. He didn't say, I got to help this guy because he's going to be a prophet one day. What he did is, I care for somebody who's hurting. I'm going to help you practically. And by doing that, he became a part of Jeremiah's story and Jeremiah's ministry. The point I'm making is that you never know, the people you minister to may wind up being very helpful to the kingdom of God. Right? You can help. There are people that helped me when I was a new convert. They were kind to a young punk teenage kid. And because they were kind to me and helped me, they have a part of my ministry today. And that can be true for you and I. So those are some thoughts about effectiveness with people. Okay, let's open for some questions. Something you want to ask. First of all, about effectiveness of people, then we can move broader than that. Anything you want to know.
You mentioned a couple of things that were non-essential for, like working with a new convert.
Sure.
What are some other things that are the most common, like, things that would kill a new convert that you've seen?
Well, I think, first of all, when you're working with new converts, the best thing is to get the understanding. The overall, the idea of follow-up is to form relationship with them so that they want to keep coming, right? Normally when a person gets saved, they don't come back because the doctrine here is pure. The program is excellent. They often come because that guy is very kind to me. I like that guy. I feel comfortable. He makes me feel comfortable. So I'm going to come. He invited me to come Sunday, and we'll have a burger afterwards. I'm going to keep coming. So your job is relationship more than anything, and then praying for them. That's, if you have that understanding, then when you work with people, one of the things you're doing is you're learning for the future. And so how you learn for the future is you may be aware of something that's going on in a newcomer's life. Then you would ask a pastor, so a wiser person, some more experience, hey, they're doing this, they're saying that. Is that a big deal? No, that's not a big deal. Ignore that one. Or, yes, it is a big deal. You know, let's bring them to me or something. So one of the things that you're doing is, remember I talk about this, building a file of templates. People are very much the same. People I worked with back in 1982, 1983, I learn things. I know it for life. It's because people are often the same even around the world. So that's what you do. Then you learn, okay, that's no big deal. Yep, that's a big deal. Or this is a big deal and this is how I deal with it. Timing, all kinds of things. So that's when you're working with people. That's why if any of you that have come and said, I feel called to preach, get involved in ministry and get involved with new converts. Those are two powerful things, because ministry is how you learn how to work with people, how to be faithful. Working with new converts, how you learn wisdom. So that's what you should do. So it's not a matter of me. Here's a list. You learn that over time. And then, as always, if you pray for wisdom, that's part of it. It's a very good thing. You pray for wisdom. I think that's one I should let go. Bounce it by somebody wiser. Yes, that's excellent. I'm learning the voice of God. So you're actually getting a bigger education, right? So you pray for wisdom, yes. Somebody else. Something else you want to ask? Yep.
Could you explain that file of templates?
A template is something that you use again and again, right? On any level. So what I say is working with people. I've pastored in three different nations, right? I've pastored only God knows how many nationalities of people, probably 50, 60 different nationalities of people in three different nations. But people are the same. So therefore, if you learn how to deal with any kind of problem, that becomes a template that you'll use again. That's what a template is. It's the pattern, you reproduce it. Like a stencil, we say, this is a stencil, I can use it again. So that's what happens. So the first time you deal with any kind of problem in a person, I guarantee you use that again. So once you deal with that, once, you have it for life. And so life is like a filing cabinet in your brain or in your heart. Okay, I went through that problem, file it away. I dealt with this issue, file it away, because you'll use it again. And that's what I mean. So then you build up a file, because then the issue is you don't have to ask if you already have dealt with it. The next time you deal with it, then you don't have to ask the pastor, right? There wouldn't be enough time in the world for us to answer every question. You build up a file. Now I know. Now it's trickier. I thought this guy was a dude. It's a lady. All right, now, wow, that's different. Okay, then I need to ask the pastor, right? So life has tricky ones. And you think I'm joking, but that's a different... I've seen crazy things in the world. Yeah, that's what it means, a file of templates.
Building relationship with converts, would it be common to spend more time with certain converts than others, just in the dynamics of...
Yeah, that Yeah, because it's people are so different, Micah. Some people, it's how much they're willing. Some people are, you know, limited. It's on need. One person needs more than another person. Yeah. So there's no... People have similarities, but every person is different. And that may be different at different times as well. There are seasons. One person, they don't need much time, but then they're going through a crisis. Now we need more time. And you gotta, you pray for wisdom in that. But that's true in every human relationship. Yep. If for a man who's gonna get married, you'll learn that one day, is that your wife will have different needs at different times. That's just the way life is. Daniel?
When you're building relationships with new converts, is that something to be thinking about, gaining awareness by seeing where can I help them? What kind of needs they have that I can meet?
Well, yeah. If you're just praying for wisdom and you have awareness, you will learn. But you just have to be involved. That's all there is to it. So any level of involvement, you're always learning. I always learn from every human relationship over time. So some are similar and then some are different, but you have to, again, God's the source of all wisdom. God, I want to be effective with people, so help me with this. Show me. I want to be wise. I don't want to hurt people, so help me to rein in anything that would cause problems. Let me be a blessing and not a curse. Yeah. David?
How does a transition happen from someone who is a new convert to wanting to become a disciple and really want to seek God's will in their life?
Well, how does it happen? A miracle. Yeah. But that's not what you're asking. You're asking, what are the signs? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
the signs, I think, it's revelation. Only God can reveal that. And hunger is that God puts a hunger. I want, I feel, I want to do something for God. I want to be used by God in some way. That's, I think, probably the most common is just a desire. I think I want God to use my life without it being specified. I'm called to preach, missionary, evangelist, or something. And then it may be that at some point God may call them. So I think when my dad at first he just said he wanted to be used by God. It wasn't specified, you know, I'm called to preach. It was more, I just want, in some way, I want my life to count. So that's a revelation issue. You can't make people do that. So you pray for it, God creates hunger, and then you have moments. What's very common is that you then get, it's often levels. If you're praying for a new convert, level one is often, I want to get involved, right? I don't just want to attend. How can I help? So then it's find a ministry, help in this area. And then beyond that, then God begins to speak more. I want, whether it's desire, I want to be used by God, or then at some point God calls people. And that is a complete shift. Now we begin to focus on the will of God. Yeah.
When it comes to developing that awareness for others,
yep.
Is that, from what you've seen, just part of the miracle God does in people? Or is that human personality? Some people are just naturally more unselfish and they need less of that. Is that just case by case?
Well, I'm sure, yes, there is something about personality and heart. There are people who are more naturally open, loving, giving. But most people don't fall in that category. To be naturally open, loving, and giving is probably more rare. Most of us are selfish. We have areas of selfishness. And then, of course, our society feeds selfishness, doesn't it? Right? We're the people who coined the word selfie. The world is all about me. So, you just have to... I think for most of us, unless you are just a naturally loving, giving person, and they do exist, but they're rare, most of us have to face our selfishness repent of that. I want to be different. So that's for me. I you know, you heard me tell the story that I recognized I was involved in ministry. I was involved in bands. I went on outreach. I was involved in various kinds of ministries, but I recognized that I didn't really have a love for people. Asked Pastor Mitchell about how to get that, you know, pray for God to give you a burden for souls, a love for people, and God did. So for me, I recognized my own lack of love. I repented of that, asked God, you got to help me. I want to change. So that on various levels, most of us fall in that category. Yeah. Right?
How did you know when you had changed?
How do you know what?
How did you know when you had changed? Like, how did you know when you had that love for people?
Well, I guess you do begin to care. You know, number one, you're aware. Selfish people are self-absorbed. They're unaware that the world even exists. So when you become aware of other people's needs instead of focusing on you, that's probably step number one. Something is changing in me. It bothers you. That's often you read in the Bible, Nehemiah, different places, it bothered them. The needs of other people bothered them. This is something that's not right. Ebed-Melech apparently it bothered him that Jeremiah was suffering. So that would be a level. And then a lot of things, right? It's not a matter of, you know, I am 2.17% nicer than I was yesterday. It's not like that. And then often over time, it's effectiveness with people is seen by results in some ways. If there's a change, you will be more effective. Somebody will, you know, you do something that to you is not a big deal. Like I say, when I greeted that backslider, and he said it made impact on him, it's like, oh, gee, that was a good thing that I did then. All right, well, that's, I need to do more of that, right? So I was learning in that way. Yeah. Somebody else. And then on the other hand, one thing that some guys never see is they never examine the trail of bodies. There are some people, every person they've ever talked to has backslidden, died, finished, you know. I often say some people, if this was the real world, you'd have been arrested as a serial killer years ago. Because everyone dies, right? And so it's self-honesty as well. Not that there'd be anyone like that here right now. I'm talking about other guys. Yep.
What's the time frame or like the approach of a new convert where they get saved, but the transition of them actually wanting to attend for themselves instead of just attend because they have a relationship with you, where you could see like it's not clicking. It's just like they're coming because you keep.
Well,
you're there.
Well, I can't give you a time frame because everybody's different. And it all depends. I mean, if it's a person who's coming every service only for that, that would be one thing. Someone who comes only once every 2 weeks, there would be a very different time frame. It's not that. I think one of the things that you do when you're working with new converts is you learn effectiveness. And here, let me give you a simple thing. I pray with this guy on outreach, or I pray with him at the altar. I'm following up. I have called him 900 times, visited him, taken him out for burgers, and he's never come. Okay, you speak to a pastor, the pastor say, then that's not workable. You can't keep spending time. In Australia, they say you can't flog a dead horse, right? You can't get a dead horse to move. So, no, then pull back. Or this person never comes unless I give them a ride. They, you know, on and on and on. Okay. Leave them a week and see what happens. Those are things you learn. That's the wisdom part of it. But how long that will take, that would be different for every person. And you just got to learn that in time. Dave?
So some new converts take out the lunch or close to maybe the house. And things that I don't want to deal with, and I can think of two. One is, you know, they want to get a bunch more tattoos because they've got a little empty space here they haven't filled yet. And then, or it's they're wearing an amulet.
Sure.
Jesus hanging on a cross and stuff. And, you know, normally these are things that I don't want to talk to. I really don't want to address.
Yeah.
But they've been in a, like a little conflict with other people about it, maybe other new comments, whatever. And so it's being pushed. And I don't want to deal with it, but I don't feel I should lie to them. What I think.
Yeah, that depends, Dave. Obviously, you're in a little bit different situation because you're working in a set rehab ministry to where you know, that's not the same as most other, which are purely by choice, right? There is an element, they might be on probation or something else, so you're forced. So, you know, you work it out, probably seeking wisdom. There's two ways of dealing with that is one, explaining why. That would be one way. Or two, I don't know, let's talk to the pastor. I'll go with you. Let's see what he says. Let's get somebody wiser and see how they, you know, might be how they explain it might help you for the future, or that might be just a good way. That's often a very good thing, is that for most people working with new converts, it's not a matter of dealing what they're doing wrong with what they're doing wrong. It is at appropriate moments, okay, that needs to be dealt with. You know what? Hey, how about let's ask the pastor about that. I'll go with you. Let's ask him for some wisdom on this. And then that is the normal way I get people, you know, they're living together. Hey, let's go talk to the pastor about that. And when they ask a question or something, so.
A short list of issues that you want to be turned over to the pastor.
No, that's why you pray for wisdom. Pray for wisdom, because that's what life isn't. Human, there are personalities that are very comfortable with lists, which is why their legalism is in many churches, because some people really want lists. Just give me a list of do's and don'ts. But salvation isn't meant to be that way. Work out your own salvation is one scripture. And then it's meant to be, when you're working with new converts, Dave, you're growing at the same time that they're growing, right? So working that out, I'm praying for wisdom. I feel that I should. That's part of it. You're growing at the same time, which is a good thing. Yeah.
What are some intentional moves and actions that you should take to become a more loving, patient, and wise person in working with converts?
Well, some actions. I think it has to start from the heart. I could give you do this or that, but if it doesn't come from the heart, then other people are going to know it. Right? Someday you'll probably, in life, you'll meet a salesman and he'll say the right word, like, have you lost weight? You're looking good. He doesn't mean it and you know it. So even though those were nice words, it has to come from the heart. So first of all, you got to pray that God change your heart. Then I don't think I can't give you a list. I think the issue is, first of all, be aware, which is what we said, and then trying to make connection with people. That's part of life. Conversation is a skill. You got to learn it. And in conversation, I mentioned something to my wife this morning. It's amazing how some people, you have a 2-minute conversation and they're telling you details of their need and their problems in their life. Others are not like that. So you got to learn how to have those conversations. So conversation is a skill which will lead you to, okay, this is stressing my brain out. Ah, there's a problem here. So, I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to, you know, there's just different ways you learn over time, but it has to be from the heart. Otherwise, it won't work. Ayo?
Pastor Greg, so when we bring it to the king or pray for revelation, right? So you're saying the eyes and the ears of awareness is getting that specific need as you talk to him, build relationship.
Sure.
Is that what helps to pray revelation? You know, like, what is praying for revelation? Like, so that they can get it? Is that from the need?
To understand it. So understanding is, I mean, is as simple as they need to understand that they need to come to church. That would be a fundamental for new converts. Hunger. You got to have a true life produces hunger. Someone who prayed the prayer and they have zero hunger. They never want to come to church, never want to read their Bible, never want to pray. They're not born. Because a baby that's born wants to eat, right? Remember me telling you about my friend that I prayed with? I prayed with him back in 1982 and then he backslid and I prayed with him in March this year. He emailed me on Thursday and he said, since in 40 days since he got saved, he's read the New Testament 3 times. And he said Thursday, it was Thursday in Australia when he emailed Thursday night, he said, I read 65 chapters of the Bible today. He said, I'm just hungry to read God's word. So that's a sign. So that's something you pray. God, show them that they need to come to church. Make them want to. Give them a love for your word. Cause them to want to leave their sin or whatever the practical issue is. Yeah, so the revelation is just, I mean, to open their eyes that they need to do something or that they need to stop something in various ways, yeah. Good. Somebody else.
For the approach to have, like, wanting effectiveness with backsliders, how would you approach that differently? Because they already know what they need to do. They're, like, already know what their approach is, but they're just, like, you could see the resistance of wanting. Like, obviously, they backslid for a reason. So sure. It's, like, how do you approach that?
Okay, so people that leave the church, let's make sure we understand two different categories. Somebody who leaves because of sin and somebody leaves because of rebellion, that's two very different things, right? You know, we leave in the church, we're going to a new church. Those are the people you should not go after, okay? Because there's a spirit to rebellion. Number one, and you're very unlikely to have any effect. Number two, their spirit get on you. So that's different. Backsliders, however, when someone backslides, often is we learn. Remember Jerry Solberg that passed away. I got back from Australia and I learned Jerry hadn't been in church, so I went and visited him. What's going on? Which is normal. We don't just leave him be. And I found out, you know, Jerry was honest with me. He said he wanted to get drunk, wanted to get laid. So okay, so it's not going to work, Jerry. But then you have backsliders, you're praying for them, and occasionally it may be that you send them a text. Josh Wright, who just got saved, a lot of people, myself included, at various times, I would send Josh a text. I'm praying for you. I'm thinking of you. Right? And trying to keep the door open. But then God arranges it. You run into a backslider somewhere. You're able to talk to them. So, yeah, it just depends on where they're at that time. We get backsliders that they're not receptive, they're mouthy, they're, you know, tell you where to go, and that's not the potter's house. And so leave them some more time. Then life begins to work out not good. Now they become open. You get another opportunity. So, yeah, wisdom. Wisdom, wisdom, wisdom.
Yep. Can you repeat some of those things you were saying that you pray for new converts, like hunger for the word? And
yeah, they got to have a hunger, a desire to come to church, the word and prayer, and a desire to be with Christians. All right? They still want to be with their gangster friends, only hang out with Hoochie Mama, they're not going to make it, right? So they got to have a desire to change relationships. They have to have a desire to leave their sin. whatever it is. There's different things that keep people from coming, right? One guy, it's a relationship. Another one, it's drugs, money, a job, whatever it is. God, you gotta change those. You're changing desires, changing circumstances. God, if Hoochie Mama is keeping him from coming to church, then that can't be your will. Get involved in that relationship. Cause Hoochie Mama to find some other dirtbag. Right? Whatever the case might be. Yeah. Good. Yes, sir. Very good. Okay, guys. Good questions. Here's the printout. This for your own.